Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's almost like I never left the room. Here Friday night, here Sunday morning, here Monday night. You're stuck with me.
Welcome to my life.
Right? Like now, all of you have to deal with what Curtis has to deal with on a regular basis. You should all feel bad for him. Mark Berger filling in for Dick Gabriel tonight here in the big chair on Big Blue Insider. The big news of the day, actually the big news of the last 2 days, really, has been UK football commitments. Today's was Travis Tisdale. He's a 5'8", 165-pound running back. I don't know how to pronounce the name of this school.
Just say Clowns. Valdosta.
He's from Valdosta, Georgia.
Yeah, everybody
they're
knows.
They're the Vikings. So I appreciate that.
Everybody knows Valdosta.
Valdosta. He is a 3-star recruit from there. He becomes the third Georgia commitment for this 2019 UK football recruiting class, along with KD McDaniel and Jay Ward. McDaniel, also a 3-star. He's an outside linebacker. Ward is a 3-star cornerback. McDaniel's from Tifton, Georgia. Curtis, you ever driven to Disney World?
No.
Really? Have you never been to Disney World, Curtis?
We flew there when I was 10.
Oh, I gotcha.
But that was the only time.
You've driven to Florida, right?
Yes.
Like down 75, you drive right through it. It's right before you get to Valdosta.
There you go.
We stay there sometimes on our way to St. Pete Beach.
Good to know.
There's a big water tower with a peach on the side of it, because it's Georgia. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, there's either peach or peanuts.
Right. Those are your options.
Every stop on the way.
The billboards change dramatically once you get into Florida, but we will not discuss those here.
Wait, what are they in Florida?
They're, you know what they're for in Florida.
I don't exactly know.
Truck stops and trucks. I'm making air quotes around truck stops.
And is there pain? Are there still pain management places that are also I don't remember seedy than the truck stop?
I don't remember the pain management places. I just remember having to tell my children to avert their eyes when they were young as we were driving past Florida billboards. So George, it's all cool because it's peaches and boiled peanuts. And then you get to Florida and it's other business propositions that aren't nearly so wholesome. Just saying. So Tisdale joins, DeMonte Crooms from Butler High School in Louisville, who committed yesterday. He is a 3-star wide receiver, 6'1", 165. That is as much recruiting news as you're ever going to get from me, I feel like.
It's a lot from you.
Right. It's a dang near a novel from me. This recruiting class is currently all 3-star guys and 1 no-star guy, but he's a junior college guy, so they don't get stars the way everybody else does.
That's not fair.
I know. It feels, you know, sort of mean. Just because you went to junior college, you don't get no stars. I don't understand why. Somebody should be ranking junior college players by the star factor.
I'm sure somebody is.
It's just not the site I'm looking at.
Probably.
Is what you're saying.
Yes. I would imagine that.
So that's where we are with the football recruiting. These are 2019 commits, so they will not be able to sign until that early signing period in December. Then hopefully we'll be off to the races. They'll all sign their letters of intent, and we won't have to worry about them anymore, as opposed to having to wait an extra 2 months until February for that to happen. So that's football news. Basketball news, we had a whistle-stop tour, Curtis. Talked about this a little bit yesterday on Sunday Morning Sports Talk. The UK basketball team hopped on a train. I still don't, very much like the logistics of NBA draft trades, I still don't fully understand the logistics of the train ride. They got on a train, went to Frankfurt.
Yes.
And then just rode back.
Yes.
Like the old Kentucky Dinner Train sort of thing.
I guess. They stopped and did a basketball camp in Frankfurt.
Oh, okay. So I forgot about the basketball camp too. So then they stopped in Midway and signed a bunch of autographs.
Yep.
And stopped in Lexington and met people and signed a bunch of autographs. you showed today on Twitter, you tweeted out that I can't remember the photographer's name, but that drone shot,
Alex
from Midway,
the Herald Leader.
Yes, and that was amazing because it's just.
The interesting thing was it. I don't know. Crowd estimations are. I have no idea how to do them. There's probably a mathematical formula, but it was in the hundreds, I would guess. According to one UK basketball player's social media, he said there were 600. I think he probably just made up that number. I don't know where he got it from, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. But the line wrapped all the way around this bank, but it like people just kept coming, I guess, because they were like, they actually showed up in Midway. So I looked up the population of Midway, and it's 1,200.
It's not big.
Yeah. I think most of the town was there.
Well, it's easy to get to from Georgetown.
So you know it's midway between Frankfort and Lexington.
Is it? I did not know that.
That's where it got the name from.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay. I feel like it's easy to get to from Georgetown, so folks might have rolled over from there.
Or anywhere.
Or really anywhere else, actually. It's not hard to get to from Versailles. You just take, what is that, 62 right over. It goes right in the middle of downtown, right to the train stop.
Pretty much.
So, Cal, talk to folks a little bit. Where did he make the talking stop? Was that here in Lexington, or did he do that in Midway?
It was in Midway.
Okay.
That's when he talked to the media. Talked to people as signing the autographs. He didn't, just stand there silently.
Some people do that. Ray Knight did that to me when I was a kid. He is kind of a jerk. He didn't talk to anybody. What? Curtis Birch. Ray Knight was the third baseman for the Reds.
When?
After Pete.
So in the 70s? 80s?
80s. 80s. Okay. Yeah, it was the 80s. You weren't born yet, were you?
That's pretty
Dang
good.
It! I knew good. That was coming! How did I not see that? It's like a train coming right down the tracks to maintain the theme. But Ray Knight, he was the Reds' third baseman in the 80s. And then he moved to the Mets and sucker punched Eric Davis in the early 90s. So that's how he was. But when he did a Polaroid promotion once at the Sears, and we went in to get our picture taken with Ray Knight, and then he'd sign the Polaroid, but he wouldn't talk to you.
Could you pay extra to get a nice?
Nah, man, it was free, right? It was you weren't paying for the autographs yet. We weren't up to that level.
Well, this was free as well.
Autographed them, but I don't know if you could have paid extra and had Ray Knight smile or be nice to you for a minute. But
can I tell you, go.
They didn't offer.
None of that was available.
No, there was no extra Ray Knight smiles at you charge.
Well,
that was made public at least.
Along those lines, this was kind of terrible. But there was this guy, and the way it was set up is there was a line, but people were just all over the place because they wanted to see the players get off the train, so they kind of ran to this one portion of downtown, and then they got back in line, and so it was just masses of people everywhere. And some people were kind of behind the autograph tables. And there was this guy who was, he wasn't super close to anybody, but it was clear, you were in earshot and you could take cell phone video. And for 5, 6, maybe 7 minutes, he stood there with his phone up. And he had it, I think it was a video rolling. And he looks at PJ and goes, PJ. Give me that mean face. And PJ Washington had to hear him because he was way too close not to hear him, but he just stayed focused on the autographs that he was given. He was being nice and cordial to all the autograph seekers and all the kids that were coming through the lines, but he was not acknowledging this fool over here trying to get PJ to make his mean face, and a minute would go by, and then the guy would go again,
Curtis.
PJ.
I asked my dad to get video of PJ doing a mean face. I don't think it's very nice for you to make fun of him.
I don't think that was a burger.
It was not. I'll be honest with you. It is hard for athletes at any level these days to just go try and be themselves anywhere on earth. You know, even in one of those. I mean, that is a made for fandom, autograph line. And I'm generally surprised at how well people behave in those, to be honest with you. I've been to the UK Fan Day a couple of times. It's not bad. Everybody seems sort of happy to be there. When UK quarterbacks aren't calling my wife old, you know, it goes pretty well. But generally, people are pretty well behaved. But it's hard, and it's especially difficult for professional fans. For professional athletes, I think a lot of people just sort of shrug their shoulders and are like, okay, you know, this is part of your gig. But for college athletes, I think it's a little bit tougher. I can't imagine, you know, like trying to go to the mall. How hard is it to go to the mall as a college basketball player?
Probably pretty.
For example, I mean, I've told the story before where I saw, like, not long after his perfect game, saw Tom Browning get run out. Actually, it might have been right after the World Series. So it was a couple years then. I lose track of time. But it was after the World Series, so not after his perfect game. Tom Browning get run out of the mall in Florence just trying to buy his kid shoes by people who were trying to get autographs. And he tried to explain to him, man, I don't have time to give you autographs right now. I have to get shoes for my son so we can make it to his basketball practice. And the guy said, no, just one. And then by the time the guy argued with him four or five times about just one, a crowd of about 50 people had shown up, and Tom Browning just was like all exasperated and walked out of the mall without any basketball shoes. And what did the guy say about Tom Browning?
What a jerk.
That's exactly what he said about Tom Browning, who's one of the nicest people on the face of the earth. And I was like, no, he wasn't a jerk. And I think that happens a lot. It happens a lot to professional athletes, and I think it probably happens a lot I'm sure it happens a lot to college athletes too, because people, for whatever reason, think they have sort of like a right, or that the athletes owe them something.
Well, it's kind of interesting to see Reed Travis's eyes get really big when he saw the crowd.
Right? It has to be a little bit different for him. And it's, you know, it's one thing for like college freshmen, right? So all the freshmen coming in, they've never seen that before, obviously, because they've never been in that environment before, but they've had some fanfare recently because of the recruiting process, so that it might be a little harder to wow them. But Travis has been playing, I mean, not really in a college basketball, you know, outpost. He's been playing big time college basketball, but college basketball fandom at Stanford isn't exactly the same as college basketball fandom here, and it had to be a little disconcerting.
Yeah,
at first,
I'm sure he was pretty impressed. It was quite a scene.
I'm certain it was. Cal had some things to say at the train stops, and we will discuss those when we return. You're listening to Big Blue Insider on the home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. Welcome back, Community Trust Bank, Sunday Morning Sports Talk. Nope. Only took me one time. Big Blue Insider, Mark Berger filling in for Nick Gabriel tonight. I got taken back to yesterday when you played the same song. This song has now been played more times in the last 2 days than in the previous 10 years combined.
I heard it was one of your favorites.
No, it's not bad. It's the Christmas version of it that I find offensive, because they didn't bother to write a new song. They just made a bunch of new words and made it Christmassy, and it doesn't. It's not even like they didn't even make really a bunch of new words. They just said Santa likes to rock it on a something Christmas choo-choo train. It's just dumb. Speaking of choo-choo trains, we were talking about the UK whistle stop tour from yesterday. And Cal had some things to say about this year's team. A lot of them are fairly, you know, Cal regular Cal commentary.
I mean, to a certain extent.
But he had a couple of other things that were sort of insightful. Curtis?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, at the end of the last segment, we were talking about Reed Travis a little bit. The Stanford grad transfer, and Calipari was asked about him, and he kind of, you know, discussed him a little bit.
You want guys that want to be here, and he wanted to be here. Now, I want you to think about it. He graduated from Stanford, and now he's going to finish his basketball at Kentucky. What? I mean, it's pretty good stuff. I mean, and he's... What a great attitude about what he wants to do, and knowing we got to do this together. And me and PJ, one, are really going to help each other to get better.
And as you can hear there, still a lot of people milling around.
Right.
And I didn't have the angle, but if you check out Kyle Tucker's Twitter account, there's a lady doing, like, it's not jazzercise, but it's power walking with the little pink weights.
Right.
So, like, Cal's talking, and then this lady all of a sudden comes into frame, and she's moving these weights, and she's walking, and she stops, and she looks confused because she's just going for her Sunday.
Sure, yeah.
Sunday evening stroll on Midway to get some
steps
in.
This is where I walk on Sundays.
And she looks, and there's John Calipari and a bunch of people recording what he's
like,
saying.
Like, I love the fact that nobody stops her, right? You just...
Well, I mean, like, she wasn't... She didn't, like, encroach on us.
Oh, okay.
She didn't come, like... She just was in frame. So, she was just behind him.
Gotcha.
I mean, we're in downtown Midway. We were on their turf.
Right. You just, sometimes you just can't stop them.
But Cal's expression is worth it. Worth to go check out the video. And it's... The full one's on BigBlueInsider.com. As you can hear, it's kind of tough because there's so many people. But it's a little easier to read his lips. But, you know, I pulled that clip and then we got one more here. But Reed Travis is just... I am intrigued to see him... What he and P.J. Washington become together and then going up against each other in practice.
Well, I think as Cal points out, they've got an opportunity to make each other a lot better. You know, maybe, you know, PJ sort of with just his physical abilities, and then Reed with the way that he can sort of teach PJ how to manage, you know, college basketball situations. PJ, you know, has 1 year under his belt, but Travis has played, as I mentioned before, big time college basketball against some really, really, really good basketball teams. And has a lot more knowledge of sort of what's going on, and I think that's something that would be valuable. It's something that this team lacked a little bit last year, certainly lacked the year before that, and he's a big piece of sort of a more experienced puzzle this year for UK.
I would agree. And speaking of all those pieces, and this has been creeping up around social media and everything, I think it's kind of silly, but Calipari was asked about it, and people had been wondering about platooning, and the way it was phrased, it was basically, you know, when he was famous quote from when he was going into that 38-1 season was the fact that he said, you know, we don't have reinforcements. We don't have subs. We have reinforcements. It's like tanks coming over the hill or whatever. And so he was asked, you know, about that and then kind of contrasting it to what he's going to have this season.
Everybody that deserves to play will play. I'll figure it out. But this isn't communism. And if you're not up to it, you're not playing. And they know that. And they're responsible for themselves. None of them are comfortable right now. And that's the way you want it. You know, there's no delusion over like, ooh, I got this guy. We're competing. Now, we all know I can play them all. I've done it before. Do I want to do that? No. But we'll have to see how it all plays out.
He likes the fact that they don't know if they're going to get their starting spot or not.
Well, and I, you know, how long, Curtis, how many times have we talked about, well, not we talked about, people have called in to talk about on this show, you know, why doesn't he just bench, like that was the mantra of the Harrison era, why doesn't he just bench him? Well, because the first year, he didn't have anybody to take their place. The second year, he had so many people that they at least got rests. I mean, it wasn't like he was pulling people out because he was mad at them. They went for their, whatever it was, 5 minutes and another 5 minutes and another 5 minutes and another 5 minutes. Until Poitras got hurt, and then it sort of, you know, shook up the system a little bit. But, you know, knowing that they have somebody that can come in and do your job has been one of the great motivators in sports history.
The bench motivates.
That's a fact. I mean, it is having, I don't have a lot of experience of actually getting to play, but I feel like...
The bench didn't motivate you. You're actually a terrible example.
Well, I mean, there's only so much you can do with limited physical ability, man. That's how it works. I mean, I was only ever going to be so good at basketball, and it wasn't even good enough to play at my high school, which wasn't good at basketball in general. But I feel like, had I gotten to play more, that it would have been more fun to play than to watch other people play.
As a rule, yes.
In that regard, I feel, well, I mean, in some of the beatings we took, maybe less so. Maybe I was better off where I was, but... I still feel like it would have been more fun to play than not play. I mean, I got to play a lot of the soccer games, and that was fun, and it was more fun than watching the basketball games, so I'm going to assume that that translates.
That's probably pretty accurate, I would imagine.
So, you know, at least now he has, and they were in trouble last year a lot of times roster-wise. They didn't have, it wasn't that they didn't have guys that they could bring off the bench to fill roles. They didn't have guys. I mean, they had the guys that they had on the court for most of the first half of the season. They got Vanderbilt for a little while.
Then he was gone.
And then you're scraping at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back and discuss this more when we return. You're listening to Big Blue Insider on the home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. And down
to the street. This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Welcome back, Big Blue Insider, where Curtis spends 2 hours torturing me and by extension you, with terrible music. Mark Berger filling in for Dick Gabriel tonight. If you want to join the conversation, 280-2287, 1-800-606-4263 are the numbers. You can email us, mark@WLAP.com. You can tweet me at Meisterberger, or you can tweet Curtis at Curtis Birch. If you stopped out at the Whistle Stop Tour yesterday, I'd love to hear from you.
It actually is.
See what you thought of the show.
The exact same song.
It is, absolutely. I told you that at the beginning of the last segment. It's the exact same song. They just changed it to Santa Claus is Rocking on a Boogie Woogie Choo Choo Train, and then they changed the verses a little bit.
No, Santa Claus is Coming.
Coming on a Boogie Woogie Choo Choo Train.
Yeah.
See, it's just, it's...
You think this is what they base the Polar Express books off of?
Probably. This is easily one of the worst five Christmas songs in the history of mankind.
Oh, no, man.
Like, it's up there with Christmas Shoes and...
It's not a bad song, that just makes you sad.
And Do They Know It's Christmas?
So you just don't like to be sad.
Which seems odd, right? Feels like that's been my specialty all these years. Being upset about things. Turns out it's not true. I don't like to be upset about Christmas. I love me some Christmas. I did get a text that said that I dated myself in the first segment when I mentioned Polaroids. I feel like I'd crossed that bridge when I mentioned Ray Knight.
Yeah.
Polaroids making a comeback, Curtis.
Where?
Like, we were at a cross-country meet, and one of the cross-country runners had one of these little tiny Polaroid cameras, and she was running around taking pictures of... No. It was a camera. It spat out a picture, and then the picture developed in front of your eyes like magic, and then she was handing them out to people.
Did you get one?
No. She was taking pictures of the other runners. I didn't want... That would have been weird, Curtis. I just noticed it happening.
Okay. Sorry. Didn't mean to insult you.
No, you didn't insult me. So, back to the Whistle Stop Tour. If you stopped out and caught up with the players during that yesterday, I'd love to hear from you and see what you thought of it, and what your experience talking to the players was, unless you asked PJ Washington to make a mean face, in which case, you just keep that to yourself.
That guy's listening right now.
He might be pretty mad already. But... That is, to me, the story that Cal told yesterday was he was on a plane with the guy who's sort of running Corman now, and they talked about...
Not sort of. He's
the
CEO.
He's the CEO. Okay.
Yeah.
So they talked about RJ and you know, the first Whistle Stop Tour they did, which was the national championship year, and they're like, well, why don't we do that now? So off they went. Put it together in a week, and you tell Big Blue Nation, hey, we're going to be at X place at X time. Folks going to show up. It's pretty easy to put that stuff together.
Well, that
except for the train part, which seems logistically difficult.
Yeah, the train probably was the most difficult part. But this was, I think, technically an extension of the Big Blue Caravan.
Right.
Which was going around the state. There was no train.
Right, and caravan. Actually not even really a caravan because there were no, like, camels or tents or anything.
Nothing along those
lines.
They
just took buses, probably.
Yeah, they hung out at different places. You got to meet coaches and athletes of different sports. So, lots of outreach from UK Athletics this summer.
Like, which are great, by the way. I mean, like, I've been to the Reds caravan a couple of times, and I love going to those things because there are decreasing opportunities for you to get to spend time with or to say hi to even the athletes that you follow and watch on TV and those sorts of things, because as we mentioned before, it can be really difficult to be a professional or college athlete these days and be out in public. So your access is somewhat limited. So when they do those caravan things, I think they're outstanding. I do love that they started in Marshall County too, by the way. I thought that was a nice touch.
That was really neat.
So, but this is sort of the start of the process, of the summer process. So it's every 4 years still that you get to take one of these foreign tours before the season.
Correct.
So Kentucky, it's been 4 years since their last one.
Yes.
It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but it has. So they're going back to the Bahamas because they like the Bahamas. Why wouldn't you? And this seems like the start of getting a bunch of new guys acclimated, not just to each other, but to the situation they're going to be in here. And I think that that's probably, not just from a fan standpoint, but from a team building standpoint, probably the biggest takeaway from this is you get an opportunity to put everybody in sort of a space together where they see, as Cal mentioned, how much all of this means to the people that are going to cheer him on, and they get it before they have to show up for their first game or the blue-white scrimmage or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little taste. So they understand what they're getting into. And so when they go out into other events or just, as you mentioned, to a mall and are kind of mobbed, they maybe expect it to a certain extent or something along those lines. Can deal with it better than if they hadn't met these people before. I will say this is interesting. People bring some crazy stuff to get signed. Not like crazy. Not like babies and toasters, which
I've seen it. I watched Josh Harrelson sign a baby.
No, I know that tale. But there was some shoes, which aren't, you know, that crazy. But this guy had, and as we mentioned, this was announced on Friday and took place on Sunday. So I don't know if this guy just had this or if somehow he had it rush made, but he had a replica of Rupp Arena's floor. Like tiny. Well, not that tiny. I mean, it was probably, I don't know, if you set it on the ground, it's about the size of an 8-year-old.
Okay.
Chest level of a normal man. Like, that's how big it was.
Wait, what?
Like a Rupp, like in a frame, like the floor of Rupp Arena.
Okay, I got you. So if you set it on end.
Yeah.
So it was 4 feet long, basically.
Yeah, I would estimate that. But I don't know how. Do you just have that? Do you somehow go to your.
I feel woods, like you would have to just.
Craftsman
have had
guy
that?
And be like, hey, I need a Rupp floor in 2 days.
Can you make this happen? Maybe you 3D printed it, Curtis. We're making miracles all the time now. You can 3D print a car. I feel like you could probably 3D print. A replica of the Rupp Arena floor, maybe.
Maybe. But there were some wide eyes when it got set in front of them. They're like, whoa, what is going on here?
That's a big deal. Yeah. I have to be honest with you. We discussed Johnny Bench on Friday because you got to see Johnny Bench on Thursday night.
Yes,
Went down to Georgia. I have in my possession a 1971 poster day Johnny Bench poster giveaway that I'm just waiting, like to this day, I'm waiting for it to get signed.
So you were at the ballpark when you were 3?
I was at the ballpark when I was an infant. Like, that's what we did. Back when you could afford to take the family to a ballpark. I would go to we went to Reds games. I mean, I've been going to Reds games since I was I've been going to Reds games since I was 2, probably. I haven't been to one in a while.
Were you just a token to get an extra poster?
Maybe. I might have been, but I have this poster. Actually, the poster hangs in one of the boys' bedrooms because when we moved into this house, he wanted his room decorated in Red stuff. So he got that poster, and I've got a Reds batting helmet too, ready to get autographed by somebody.
Did you steal it? Or?
The batting helmet I bought at an outlet mall in New Braunfels, Texas.
Was it real?
Yeah.
Like game?
Oh, no, well, not game worn, but it's game eligible. Yeah, it was at the Rawlings outlet.
Okay.
So it's a authentic Rawlings batting helmet. And you get it at the Rawlings outlet in New Braunfels, Texas for, I think it was $12.50. That's what I bought that for.
Sounds like a great deal.
It was. It'd be a better deal if I get it signed. So next year, you got to sneak me in with the radio equipment. See if we can make
bring
that,
in another,
see
if bring we can in make another that box.
Out. So, but you were talking about how the train tour gives guys the opportunity to see sort of how much this means before, you know, that you know, it becomes game time, important time. And I love that you mentioned how wide Reed Travis's eyes got when he saw this crowd. Because can you imagine, like, his first experience with this, he's got to play ball.
That probably wouldn't be easy.
I can't imagine.
I'm imagining he's been in some hostile environments, but, you know, when Stanford's coming to town, it's not the biggest game of your season.
Unless you're Cal. Not Cal,
no,
our
Cal's
coach. Cal,
oh.
The school. Did anybody ask him about Marcus Lee?
Who?
Reed Travis. They would have had to have played against each other, right?
To him.
Oh, yeah, you didn't get to talk to him. I forgot.
Well, I mean, I guess I could have just gotten in line and gotten an autograph. And
like you could have just
done
yelled.
Like an exclusive interview.
Yeah, just like a sneak one in.
Yeah.
So, talking about the team building piece of it, they do this. They go to the Bahamas in August, and then they start real live practice in October, right?
Well, they start.
Well, they get to practice. That's the other thing. They get to practice 10 times this summer headed into.
No. Well, yes, but they get 4 hours of practice a week starting next week. because of the new rules.
Right.
So Calipari's going to use those. He was excited about that.
They get the 4 hours of practice, and they get the trip to the Bahamas where they can, I assume they can practice however much they want when they're not playing games.
Probably.
But they play games every day.
They have one off day.
Okay.
Play 4 games in 5 days. And they get there 2 days early, so they have 3 off days overall. Calipari did also mention, you know, he said he went into his office at 10 p.m. last week, and the lights were on in the gym, and he looked down, and no one was playing on the court, but they were all around the court talking. And we talked about building chemistry and how, you know, when you're putting a team like that together, that coming from all different areas and only 3 guys have ever played together before, you know, building that chemistry is obviously probably one of the most important things when you have talent. So he seemed to be really excited that they were doing that.
And that is a little bit of a departure from what we heard from him most of last season, where you didn't have that sort of connectivity necessarily from player to player.
Yeah, trying to remember back the team chemistry and bonding. Well, they all said they always hung out. It seemed like there were, and it's not a knock on anybody, that were some kind of, you know, lone wolf types. Like Gilgeous Alexander was quiet. Everyone said everybody seemed to get along, but didn't seem like they had the same chemistry. Though, I mean, there's some personalities that showed in the signing. Like Keldon Johnson was super smiley and was having a great time with everybody. Manuel Quickly yawned a little bit, but I don't really blame him for that. He was still attentive. But the funniest thing was when it was with Keldon Johnson and there was a baby. And I'll tell you about that in a second.
All right. We're back to the baby signing. Browdown tweets in and says, my biggest regret not having kids was never having anything for a Kentucky player to sign. If you're not familiar with that story, like Harrelson came to a Special Olympics basketball league night here in Lexington, and somebody wanted him to sign something. It was him and Jared Polson. And the person wanted autographs but didn't have anything for them to sign, so somehow had a Sharpie but nothing to write on, and they handed Josh the baby and the Sharpie, and off they went. I want to get to the phones real quick and get Roy in here. Roy, you're on Big Blue Insider. What's up?
Yeah, I got a basketball question and a football comment.
Okay,
on the basketball
go.
Basketball question, the kid that went number one at Arizona, they're in the same conference that Reed was in.
Yes.
Could you tell me how high Reed was rated in that conference?
In what regard?
Well, was he the third best player, fourth best player, fifth best? We know Aiton was the best.
Well, I don't know that he would have. Like,
he was all Pac-12, so he was top. I'm guessing SEC has 8 guys on their all first team, so he was a top 8 player in the league, probably top 5.
I know he had 16 double doubles playing there,
and he gave it to Aiton a couple of times last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I got a football comment. That 6'7" wide receiver they got up there, somebody was talking about it the other day, said that kid is really something, said he'll go up and get that football.
I'd hope. That'd be like, you know what, Curtis, thanks for the call, Roy. I appreciate it. That'd be like if Willie Cauley-Stein was a wide receiver.
Did he ever play anything like that?
I feel like he might have. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Big Blue Insider after this on the Home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. Welcome back. Big Blue Insider, Mark Berger filling in for Dick Gabriel alongside Curtis Birch. If you want to join in, 280-2287, 1-800-606-4263 are the numbers. You can email us, mark@WLAP.com. You can tweet the show either at Meisterberger or at Curtis Birch. Want to get to the phones and get the great John Short in here. John Short, you're a great American.
You're a great American.
You're a great American. What's up, buddy?
This dude's got a new football commitment for next year.
I know. 4 commitments in the last 4 days, John Short.
That's a good. We need about 100 commitments in the past 4 days.
I
100 commitments.
Feel like that would put us over the scholarship limit, John Short.
That's why I said not good. Got 4 commitments in 4 days. We need way more than what we already got.
They are going to have to get more than what they have. I've lost count. I've lost my little page. They've got a. They don't have a number on them. Looks like about 12 right now.
You can't count to 12.
Well, I can't get them all in one screen, Curtis. I could count to 12, but I'd have to scroll. And I'm talking to John here. Thought that'd be rude. So they are going to need more. They can sign, what is it, 20, 25 in any 1 year. I don't know how many scholarships they'll have available.
It used to be 35 scholarships when we had 95 players.
Yep, and they've gone down to 85, and it used to be on the – John Short, you would love this. It used to be unlimited scholarships. You could just stockpile guys on your team forever.
We need to go back to that again.
I don't know how that would work. I feel like Alabama would get better than they already are.
And so would Kentucky, so everybody else.
If one team takes 100 now, John Short, that means there are fewer guys at that level for other teams to take.
And I guess you said on limb about scholarships in basketball, too, one time.
What's that?
I guess you said on limb about scholarships in basketball, too, one time.
I don't know if it was unlimited, but you had a lot more because the freshmen weren't eligible. So you could, you know, you'd have to have, it was 15, you could have 15 guys on the varsity team, and they all had scholarships. Then you'd have your freshmen, and they'd have scholarships.
Think back to that, too.
Freshman ineligibility would be a weird one these days, wouldn't it, John Short?
It would, because you used to have your own team, and they were broadcast on the radio like the varsity team was.
Sometimes they were almost as good as the varsity team.
That's right.
They had a couple years here and a couple years out at UCLA where the freshman team was as good as any other team in the country.
Which I think that's good.
It would be. You got to replace the seniors. Now we just replace the freshmen, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
What else you got for me, John Short?
That's pretty much about it. This is Greg got a good football commitment for next season. He's 5'9", 180 pounds. Looks like he needs to lose some weight, go about 5'9", 140 pounds.
It depends on how those 180 pounds are on him, man. I don't know if I'd want to be 5'9", 140 pounds playing SEC football.
I don't think 140 is a good weight for a football player, John.
Okie dokie.
All right, John Short, you have a great evening, man.
That's great to see you.
You're a great American.
Great American.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody that small. Like the running back, the kid today, Tisdale, what'd I say was 5'9", 165?
Yes.
He probably had to put a little weight on.
I would imagine.
I feel like that's probably too light to play that position. Like you could maybe, Craig Yeast didn't play probably a lot heavier than that.
Hey, man.
Put him in the slot. Hope nobody hits him hard. See how it goes. By the way, coming up after the 7 o'clock break, we will talk to Lee K. Howard, who spent last week in New York City with the UK Wildcats players in the draft. Talked to each of them right after they got drafted. So we'll hear from him to see how that experience was. Lee has been making that trek for a few years now, hasn't he, Curtis?
I think a couple, yeah.
So he's got some experience watching a bunch of UK guys get drafted. So that'll be fun. Plus, it's always good to talk to Lee K.
I mainly just want to talk fashion.
Why is that? Oh, the suits?
Well, he didn't wear socks, and none of the players he was interviewing were wearing
Lee
socks.
Lee K. didn't wear socks? Did he forget to pack them?
I don't know. We'll have to find out. I'll find the picture. I'll dig up the picture.
No, I got to see this now. Now, I think it's one thing. It's one thing for LeBron James to not wear socks with his suits, or for that matter, to wear shorts with his suits. Like, I feel like...
Well, no, the suit was short.
Right, I don't understand. I understand. That's
that
what I
mean. Kind of dorky.
It's a short suit. Like, you see those sometimes, but usually they have, like, pink flamingos on them. They're not, like, real fashion suits like that one and the Trae Young wore, yeah. But normally, you know, us mere mortals, if we wear a suit, we throw socks on with that thing. Yeah. I'm unaccustomed to, like, you know, I get it. Lee K is a big TV star, and we're just, you know, regular people down here in radio. But you know, I probably wouldn't venture to bet. I wouldn't venture out without socks on with my suit. I feel like that would feel weird. But all the cool kids are doing it, Curtis, obviously. We need to get Lee's take on the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander suit that caused quite a stir.
I found the picture. I'll retweet it here.
Well, I cannot wait to see this. So we got Lee K coming up to talk
investigating
suits and draft.
He's rocking some, they look like sneakers, which isn't a fashion faux pas like it used to be.
No, sneakers. Like, Jay Billis has made that completely acceptable. Jay Billis never wears dress shoes.
I'm not seeing any socks. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander looks like he's wearing house shoes.
Even better. That's sort of the look that Lamar Jackson wore to the Heisman ceremony the year he won. Looked like he was wearing slippers.
I think that's kind of a look. I don't know.
A new
I guess
super
make
popular
these,
look. Again, much like slippers. No socks, I probably wouldn't venture out in public in a suit and slippers.
Yeah, but your slippers are pink.
Then they are shaped like bunnies. That is correct. So they don't actually go with a whole lot of things. That's an issue that I have. So, in fact, we will take that break here in just a couple of seconds, and then we will talk to Lee K. Howard about suits and drafting and basketball when we return. You're listening to Big Blue Insider on the home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP.
Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Get on the show. Call 280-CATS. That's 280-2287. Or toll free at 1-800-606-GAME. That's 1-800-606-4263. Big Blue Insider is brought to you by UK Healthcare.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Big Blue Insider. Mark Berger filling in for Dick Gabriel tonight alongside Curtis Birch. If you guys want to jump in here, 280-2287, 1-800-606-4263 are the numbers. You could email us, mark@WLAP.com, and you could tweet either myself at Meisterberger or Curtis at Curtis Birch if you've got anything you would like to add. But right now, we're excited to be joined by the great Lee K. Howard. Lee K., how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm even better now that I'm talking to the great Mark Berger and Curtis Birch.
Well, at least one of us, Curtis Birch, that would be. I'm at best mediocre, and I'm probably in a great deal of trouble right now, just so you know. Our first, and this is the most, Lee K. spent last week. How long were you in New York City with the guys?
I was there Wednesday through Friday.
Okay.
Just a couple days.
So 3 days, two and a half days, whatever, up in New York City with the guys from UK who were headed to the NBA draft. And, of course, the most important question we have to ask you is, did you forget to pack your socks?
No, I for one time in my life, Mark, was ahead of the trend of what the cool kids are doing. And I went with the no sock with the suit look. And I was very pleased that when I got to the draft, nobody was wearing socks. All the draft picks and myself, none of us were wearing socks with our suits. So, I was with like what they say the cool kids do, and that's what I did. So, it's really weird how it's changed, because like 2 years ago, I remember it was like who had the coolest socks.
Who had the wildest socks, right?
Right, like Denzel Valentine, for instance, had socks with his own picture on them, which were like probably the coolest socks. And you know, fast forward 2 years later and nobody's wearing socks at all. But there are a couple things I need to clear up about this, in case there's somebody listening that really wants to mimic this look, or maybe yourself that you know you think you can pull this off too.
I do not think I can.
There are actually socks. They're just no-show socks, because if you didn't wear socks, your feet would stink really bad and nobody wants that. So they're just the no-show socks that no one can see, and you put those on, and then your shoes, and you just show a little ankle, and it's in. And it's also just a summer look. Like, once the temperatures get cooler, you bring the socks back.
Because you can't have cold ankles.
Clear that
like
up
that
for you.
Yeah, you can't have cold ankles. The next trend is obviously, you know, you combine Denzel Valentine and the new modern look, and you just get a tattoo of yourself on your ankles, and then you're all set.
I actually think the next trend is the LeBron / Trae Young shorts suit.
Right.
I think that's next.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to get some of that.
I go on record right now of saying I think that looks absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
And I will never wear one of those unless
it becomes
that
really
becomes
popular.
Like a thing.
Right.
I will totally adopt that look, because I feel like in the summers that would just be excellent.
Oh, it would be way better.
On a hot summer day.
Honestly,
yeah, absolutely.
That's a fact. Well, on to the more important things, I guess. What was your takeaway from your conversations with the four guys, Shea and Kevin and Jared and Hamidou, after the draft?
Well, Jared wasn't there, so I did speak with the other three, and Kevin, he couldn't have been happier. I mean, well, really all three of them, but even the day before, Kevin really wanted to be picked by the Knicks, and he made no secret about that. And a lot of times those guys on those Wednesday press conferences before the draft, they'll kind of keep it under the vest a little bit, and just, yeah, any team that I go to would be great and this kind of thing. But Kevin was asked several times, because he was projected to go to the Knicks if he'd like to play at Madison Square Garden, like to play with the Knicks. And he was very open about he really wanted to play for the Knicks. So when that happened, ninth overall pick, he was very excited. Now, he was booed But I think, you know, they booed Kristaps Porzingis as well, and it's the Knicks fans, and he said he wasn't. Yeah, it worked out well, didn't it?
Yeah.
So he was, you know, Kevin was really excited. Shea was too. Shea was a guy that we really didn't even know who he worked out for ahead of the draft. Even on Wednesday when we asked him the day before the draft who he had worked out with, he just said he didn't want to talk about that. So I asked him after the draft, I said, was L.A., were the Clippers one of the teams you worked out for? And he said, yes, that was my top three of one of the places that I wanted to go, just because they're a team that, you know, really without a point guard since they traded Chris Paul, and it's a rebuilding team. And so he was excited. And then Diallo, interestingly enough, when I talked to him, it was so soon after the draft, he was still wearing a Brooklyn Nets hat. And I asked him, my first question was, I said, so there's rumors that you've been traded to Oklahoma City. You know, been traded to the Hornets at the time. So are you a member of the Hornets or the Nets? And he's like, I honestly don't know. So, you know, wherever they, and then he ended up, he got traded again to Oklahoma City the next day or later that night. So, all three of those guys, of course, very, very happy to be drafted.
Well, and back to the Knox thing, like that's sort of the Knicks is sort of a weird deal, right? Because everybody that grew up following the NBA at any level knows, or really basketball at any level, knows how important Madison Square Garden is to the sport. And it was considered the place to go play for a very, very long time. But playing for the Knicks has not exactly been a joyride over the last 10 years.
It hasn't, but I think the thing that changes now is they have a new head coach, David Fizdale, who did really well with that team in Memphis when he was there, really well liked by the players, known as a player's coach. He's a guy that I think will fit well in New York and fit well with a young group of players. And so you never know until they, you know, roll out the balls and see how it goes, but they've got some pieces. They got a point guard last year in the draft. They got Knox this year with their first pick. They've got Porzingis. They've got some, you know, I don't know that they're getting back to the Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason type days, but they're certainly headed in the right direction. And so, you know, for a kid like Kevin Knox to be on a team like that where he could actually play a role, and they need kind of a wing type player like himself, I think it's a really good fit for him.
How many bro hugs did you get?
You know, I got a hug from Hamidou, and I got a hug from Shea, I believe. That's only bro hugs I can remember, I think.
So Kevin Knox was in a bad mood because he got booed? Did he think you booed him?
No, I made it very clear I didn't boo him. He was moving around very quickly.
I'm guessing he had a lot of New York. Everybody wanted to talk to him since he was a New York pick. So he couldn't waste time he probably didn't bro hug anybody besides Spike Lee.
He probably didn't. Now I will tell you this, Mark, because Curtis always loves when I name drop and when I, you know, humble brag as he puts it. As you're standing there and you're kind of like in a booth where they come over and talk to you. Different players, excuse me, walk around and talk. I look up, and a foot in front of me, walking right at me to my booth, is none other than Grayson Allen.
Ooh.
And so it was, and he had a big old smile on his face, and there was nothing I could do except for extend my hand and say congratulations. And he just put his hand out and just this little grin on his face and said thanks. And so there's my humble brag for you, Curtis. I shook Grayson Allen's hand and told him congratulations, and I'm not real sure that I meant that, but it was just what happened in the moment when I saw him. It was just the reaction of someone right in front of your face with a big smile on their face. So there you go. So I didn't bro hug him, but I did shake his hand, and he did not trip me either. So it all went well.
That's pretty successful,
that's,
Grayson.
That's a win.
Yeah.
I feel like
that's a positive Grayson Allen interaction.
How did Shea's response differ, if at all, from Knox's? I mean, Knox came into last season expecting to get drafted. I think from Shea's standpoint, he was the one guy from that recruiting class that wasn't a McDonald's All-American, he wasn't expected to be a one and done. I don't think he was even expected to start at point guard when the season started. And there he is, two picks later. How did their response to it all differ, if at all?
Well, it didn't differ a ton, and you're right. Shea was the seventh-ranked freshman in his recruiting class, which is unbelievable. in talking to him, you get the impression that the only person that wasn't surprised that he was there was himself. I think he's always kind of seen himself in the same light as not only just the other UK freshmen that he came in with, but everybody else, you know, and he certainly proved that to be the case. But I think over the year, I mean, his confidence just grew and grew and grew. And by the time we got to the draft last week, I mean, he totally expected himself to be there, and deservedly so. He was there, picked at, you know, 11th overall. So, you know, he's just such a good, even-keeled kid that you can tell just really, really intelligent and knows what he's doing and knows how to get to where he wants to be. And so, you know, he was, like I said, really excited to go to play for the Los Angeles Clippers. But their, you know, their reactions were pretty well the same as far as they're ready to get to work. I thought he said something, Shea said something to me that was really pretty smart and intelligent when talking about I asked him, he said, you weren't one of the best players coming into college. How do you prove that? And he said, well, I'm not interested in being the best player, you know, coming into college. I was just more interested in being the best player once I got to college. And so, you know, and he said that that's basically the same mindset in the NBA, you know. So yeah, I think he's going to do well just because he's a tough kid and he's a really, really intelligent kid.
I have many more questions to ask you. We have to take a break. Can you stick with us for a little bit?
Sure.
All right, we're going to hang on with Lee K. Howard. Take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Lee K. When we return, you're listening to Big Blue Insider on the home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. Welcome back, Big Blue Insider. Mark Berger filling in for Dick Gabriel alongside Curtis Birch. We've still got Lee K. Howard with us to talk NBA draft. If you want to ask a question, 280-2287, 1-800-606-4263 are the numbers. You can email us, mark@WLAP.com, or you can tweet us either at Meisterberger or at Curtis Birch. Lee K., on to Hamidou. Hamidou is a guy who almost went, he would have been like a half and done, almost a zero and done to the NBA. And he may or may not have ended up in sort of the same situation he ended up in this year as far as draft position wise. What did he have to say after the experience, both about going through the draft process twice, and you know what he got out of his experience at UK?
I asked Hamidou after the draft if he still was confident in his decision to come back to Kentucky after not playing for that half a season, because all throughout the draft process, he stuck to his guns and said 100%, I don't regret at all coming back to UK and this and that. And he said it so many times, you want to believe him. But at the same time, I always kind of thought in the back of my head, maybe he's just saying that. And eventually he may, you know, excuse me, change his tune a little bit. But he said the exact same thing after he'd been drafted. I said, were you still confident in your decision to come back to Kentucky? And he said, absolutely, 100%. And he said, because he became a better player and he learned a lot. And so while his draft stock probably dropped, you know, if he would have come out of school after that half a year when there was still a lot of mystery around him, he probably would have gone late first round. He came back, played a year at Kentucky, and it probably did hurt his draft stock, because it exposed him a little bit more. But I think the thing that's important to remember that he talked about is he became a better player, and he knows he's a better player now than he would have been had he come out and been drafted later in the first round. So, you know, maybe in the short term it's not a win for him, but at least in his mind he feels like in the long term he's grown as both a player and a person just kind of going through some of the adversity that he went through this last year.
And the discussion has sort of been that if he's got teams that are, you know, first of all, there's the draft trade, right? The Charlotte that wanted him picked in that spot so that they didn't lose him. And then Oklahoma City obviously going after him specifically, that sort of bodes well for his chances in those places. And Oklahoma City kind of has like a background with guys that come out of UK between Dakari Johnson and some other folks that have been through their program there.
And the other thing to keep in mind about Oklahoma City that I think is really important for a guy like Hamidou is the Oklahoma City Blue is their G League team that many of the other G League teams are modeling themselves after now. You know, if you remember back just a few years ago in the then D League, it wasn't a real minor league system, so to speak, where a lot of guys that were in the D League, they never really made it up. There wasn't a lot of two-way contract discussion and things like that. And that Oklahoma City Blue, that G League team, really kind of became a minor league farm type system for the Thunder. And now a lot of teams are doing that. So it is known as one of the better G League teams in the NBA as far as developing its players, giving them chances to come up like they did to Kari, and not just essentially stashing them off and forgetting about them. They're also obviously in the same exact city as their NBA team, as opposed to a team that's off in, you know, Des Moines, Iowa or something. So it's a very good situation for Hamu, for a guy that's probably going to spend a lot of time in the G League level. It's a really good situation for him to be a part of that organization.
I feel the same way. I think that's a great spot for him. Jared Vanderbilt remains sort of the mystery. As you mentioned, he wasn't there, so you didn't get to talk to him. It was interesting to see him in the videos after the draft on a scooter. I don't think anybody, you know, outside of his circle, and I'm certain the people who drafted him were aware of the fact that he apparently had surgeries in a boot on a scooter. But he's in a really interesting spot at this point. I hadn't expected him to go ahead of Hamidou. I thought that was interesting. I was a little surprised he went at all. But here he is in a boot, and it looks like, well, it's hard to say because nobody's really said anything about it. It'd be interesting to see if he's ready to go when training camp opens even.
Yeah, and I don't think he will, but that's just my guess because I think there's so much mystery surrounding his injury and exactly what it was. If you remember back to the SEC tournament, at one point Cal said he was 90% and he thought about playing him, and that doesn't usually happen for a guy that then requires surgery after the season. So I don't know what his discussions were with Denver ahead of the draft. He was obviously picked by the Magic, traded to Denver. But I'm hoping that Denver is a team that's going to give him some time to get right, to you know, rehab. And, you know, they also picked Michael Porter Jr. So
right.
They're obviously a team that is totally fine with guys spending, you know, all of, you know, if not part of their rookie season, getting healthy and getting to, you know, maybe their potential. And so that's why I think Jared's drafted ahead of Hamidou maybe is just on potential alone. He's got the NBA body. We only saw 14 games of him at Kentucky, and we saw some really bright spots. So, you know, if you can multiply that into a full season, then you really got something. So, yeah, wish that kid the best, but there is a lot of mystery surrounding him.
And now that I've asked you about all the draft picks, back to the important matters of suits. Shea's suit raised quite a stir. There were people who loved it. There were people who hated it. There were people who described it as grandma's couch. I saw somebody say that it looks like something that you could not be allowed to sit on, even though it was covered in plastic. I was kind of a fan of his suit. What did it look like up close?
Well, you would look really good in it, Mark.
I don't believe that to be accurate at all.
I think he looked really good in it because he was rocking it with confidence. I don't think I could pull it off. It very much looked like grandma's couch. It was a very, like, coarse, hard, because I touched it. I had to touch it. I said,
sure.
Can I fill with that? And it kind of felt like a couch in a way. The backstory behind that was he said that he was getting fitted for a suit, not that one, a different, you know, something, and he saw a square piece of cloth with that print on it, and he said, hey, what about that? And so it started out as just the trim of his jacket. So he had like a solid jacket with a trim of those flowers around it. And then he said, well, let's do the whole jacket. And he liked the jacket so much, he decided to do the pants. And it was like literally one thing led to another. And he decided, let's do the shirt too. And by the end of it, he had a full on, I don't know if you noticed, the shirt was the same pattern
too.
Yeah. I mean,
the
shirt, pants, everything. So, yeah, I mean, confident kid. I never saw him as a kid that would wear something like that, but he certainly made a splash.
It was between him and Trae Young for most interesting haberdashery choice on draft night, and I liked his better than Trae's.
I did too, and yeah, I mean, he, like I said, he came in there with confidence, and that's going to be one of those people look back in years to come and go, that was awesome or that was terrible. But they'll certainly remember it. So kind of like the Jalen Rose suit at the NBA draft. I think Shea's
exactly
suit will go
right.
down
That's
go
exactly
down with that
right.
group.
You know, and whatever happens, right, you have this that you can bank on. 10 years from now, people are going to take a look at your draft class's picture on the stage before the draft and make fun of whatever it was you wore. So you might as well wear whatever it is you think is cool on that day.
That's right. And on that day, no socks. That was the cool thing.
That was, and you were with the crowd, man. And you know what happens, right? Now that you, because you're at a, like, I'm not going to say your age because I don't know it, and I've already gotten in trouble for accidentally giving out ages before. But you're pretty much a grown up at this point, Lee K. You've got, you know, one kid and one on the way, and you've got a responsible job and stuff. But you know, you've got like, this could become like when grown ups got on Facebook, man. You could be the guy that kills the no sock look for everybody.
I'm aware of that, so I'm being careful. I'm one sock at a time. I'm not going to bust out the floral suits anytime soon. I'm staying as reserved as possible.
Right.
But I am going for comfort. Any time that a style trend lines up with comfort, that means no socks and tennis shoes, I'm in.
I like it. I appreciate that very much. All right, Lee K. Howard from WKYT, appreciate the time. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your evening.
All right, you guys too.
All right, take it easy, brother. Lee K. Howard, we'll be back with more Big Blue Insider after this on the Home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. Close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens. Welcome back, Big Blue Insider. Mark Berger filling in for Nick Gabriel alongside Curtis Birch. Our thanks to Lee K. Howard for spending a half hour with us to talk draft and suits and socks. It's always important times here, Curtis, when I roll in. You can, if you want to join us, you can call us, 280-2287, 1-800-606-4263 are the numbers. You can email us, mark@wlap.com. You can tweet the show either at Meisterberger or at Curtis Birch. Some news on the golf front. Cooper Musselman, who is a just recently graduated from the University of Kentucky, is the clubhouse leader in something called the North-South Amateur Championship at Pinehurst No. 2, where Curtis, they've played the U.S. Open on that course. It's really famous. He shot a 3-under-67 today in his first official round there. He is among those who has a sponsor's exemption to the Barbasol Classic when it comes to town here in just like 4 weeks, right, Curtis?
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
It is right around the corner.
You scheduled your vacation around
I didn't. Well, here's the thing. We've had this conversation. The timeline is wrong. I thought I scheduled my vacation before they announced the Barbasol Classic, but I did not do that. I scheduled my vacation after the Barbasol Classic, although I wasn't necessarily responsible for the week that we chose. I was just along for the ride there.
Mm-hmm.
It is technically the only week all summer I could go on vacation this year, so regardless of what was happening that week, that's when I was going to take off. I apologize to the Barbasol Classic for not being there. I would very much like to be there. I think it would be amazing and a lot of fun. They also, was it David Duval? No, Davis Love III. Also going to be at the Barbasol Classic. So it's a big day for the Barbasol Classic. Also, in other golf news, dude shot a 58 on, I think it was the web.com tour. Do you, like, 59, I think. No, somebody shot a 58 on the PGA Tour this past year. So that is now the low score, like, in all of professional golfdom. That's a ridiculous score. That is, in this case, it was 12 under par, because it was a par 70 course. But that's a, like, that's a ludicrous number, 12 under par in one round. I did that once on PGA Tour golf on a computer. But
You celebrated wildly.
Oh, I did, right? I mean, I've shot 58 before, but there were still, you know, 10 holes to go. Golf is so amazing to me because even as a recreational golfer, the margin for error is so small. Like, there is millimeters between, you know, a recreational golf good shot and a recreational golf bad shot. And when you have no room for error on even the mini tours, like the web.com tour, you're talking about fractions of millimeters to be in contention or to not make any money. And it's fascinating to me, the guys who do it consistently well. Like the guys who really make money on the PGA Tour, which is, I mean, if you win a tournament now on the PGA Tour, you're making over $1 million. But the guys who make real money on the PGA Tour, win week after week after week, are so astoundingly good that it's insane to me because I know how hard it is for me to play golf. Like I can make, well, I can't make a basket from, I can't shoot an NBA three-pointer at all. I can't seem to get it all the way to the rim from out there. But I used to be able to shoot a little bit. Like, I get that. I've never been able to play decent golf, ever, under any circumstances. It's insane.
I mean, it's not that insane.
It is.
That you can't play well.
Well, no, it's not that insane that I can't play well. It's just another of the long list of athletic things I don't do particularly well, but I am sort of awestruck by the guys who do it really well. So there's that. If you want to go out to the Barbasol Classic, I encourage you to do so. It should be a fun week. My guess is that they're still looking for volunteers, and you get in that way. You got to pay, I think the last time I looked, it was a $75 fee for your gear, but it's a lot of really cool gear, and you get a lot of really cool access to the best golfers in the world. So if you're a golf person, that'd be a thing to do, I feel like.
Would be a sound investment, in my opinion.
I think so. Curtis, is there anything we left out? We spent most of the first hour talking about football commitments. UK, as we mentioned, has four football commitments in the last 4 days. The most recent one is Travis Tisdale, who is a running back from Valdosta, Georgia. He's sort of a little guy. He's going to have to put on some weight. My expectation would be that
John
he would redshirt.
John Short says you're wrong.
John Short thinks he should lose weight to 140, and I feel like that would be a dangerous weight to play SEC football at, unless you're a kicker, for example. Kickers could probably be 5'9", 140, and as long as they can kick it far enough, they're probably mostly going to be safe. Running backs, not so much.
Well, there are two important sports stories we have not discussed.
What are those,
point.
Curtis Birch?
One, Carl Anthony Towns. It's naked on your computer.
Right.
But not really naked.
No. Well, he is really naked.
He's really naked, but you don't see any of the things that will cause you to get fired.
Right.
If you bring it up on your
right.
computer.
Here is, like, this is the deal, right? We joke all the time about summer sports talk, right, Curtis?
Yeah.
Like, in some markets, it's not as bad. Like, our friends at the iHeart media stations up in Cincinnati have it pretty good, right? They've got FC Cincinnati. Everybody up there loves it. They've got the Reds. Even when the Reds are bad, everybody wants to talk about the Reds. They want to talk about how bad the Reds are or how sad they are. And then when the Reds go on a 7-game winning streak, they all put the Reds in the World Series, and it's glorious. Here, you don't get a lot of that. And apparently, ESPN the magazine doesn't get a lot of that either. You would think that they would have their pick of sports, but every summer, what do they roll out, Curtis Birch?
Body issue.
The body issue. And what is the body issue, Curtis Birch?
Basically, athletes in their bodies.
That is just naked athletes is what it is. And as Curtis, they're all tasteful so that you can't see any of the parts that would get you fired or make them have to put the magazine behind the counter, for example.
Yep, that's factual.
But it is, like, this year, Carl Anthony Towns is in it, and I'll leave you to go look at that on your own. I mean, he is extraordinarily tall. That's the takeaway from that. The curious things are they've also got Greg Norman, who I think, is Greg Norman 70 yet?
I don't know.
Jerry Rice also in it. So that it runs the gamut of, you know, current athletes, former athletes, bigger athletes, smaller athletes. It's got it all. It is the oddest, like, it is the oddest thing I think I've ever seen. Like, the first year they did it, everybody was like, what are you doing?
And some bodies.
I guess so. And I was surprised they did it a second time, much less I think we're on like 10 or 12 now of the body issues. But you can go see Carl Anthony Towns. There's one where he's dribbling a basketball and one where he's holding a basketball rim that makes it look like he just tore the rim off the backboard.
And then Grant tweeted in, Mark, provide us with your insight on World Cup officiating. That Iran-Portugal match was a hot mess. Very inconsistent calls, it seems.
I didn't get to see much of that one today. Like, I have to work during the day, but it's, you know, very much like the NCAA tournament. You put your little phone next to your desk and you have the thing going, and you, like, the guy yells when something good happens, you glance over. And it happens less often in soccer. It's a little bit easier to do this with soccer even than the NCAA tournament. And I caught bits and pieces of it, but missed the red card that everybody's upset about. I missed the Iranian goal, and I missed all of the added time where Iran almost scored, which would have eliminated Portugal and put Iran through to the knockout round for the first time. And I don't know, like, I'm not generally one to feel sorry for Iran in any way, shape, or form, but I felt bad for these guys because, the guy that missed the net, and it wasn't, you know, this wasn't Wondolowski in the last World Cup missing an open net from 2 feet in front. It was a pretty good, it would have taken a pretty good strike to score the goal. He probably, as a professional soccer player from that distance, maybe should have scored the goal. But several minutes, many minutes after the game was over, he is still standing on the field sobbing, being consoled by his teammates. And I felt bad for that guy because that's a tough way to go out. Knowing that if the ball had gone in the net, they advanced for the first time ever. That would have been extraordinary. We'll get back to more a little bit more about that. And the Panama-England game from yesterday. They're sort of linked in a way. After we go to the phones and get Dennis in here. Dennis, you're on Big Blue Insider. What's up?
Hey, guys. You might have already went over this first hour, but the wide receiver out of Louisville, Demonte Crooms,
yes.
that originally committed to Louisville but now switched over to Kentucky. Is he given a reason why he decided to switch his commitment to UK?
I have not seen one. Usually that involves, I have decided it's in my best interest and the best interest of my family to reopen my commitment, respect my decision. That's usually what you get from there at this point.
Okay.
But I mean, I saw his commitment tweet. I didn't see his decommitment tweets because I honestly don't follow it carefully enough to see decommitment tweets from other schools' recruits.
When is the early signing period in college football? Is that in October?
November? It's December. It's that weekend after. It's that week after, or it might be 2 weeks after the conference championship games. So it's either the Wednesday that second Wednesday in December, I guess, or the third Wednesday in December. Depends. I haven't looked at the calendar to see how the calendar breaks.
And I know this ain't going to happen, but this early signing period. Why don't they make this like August or something? You know what I'm saying? It's just, to me, November's not even early enough.
Well, I think for a lot of the guys, I wouldn't want to see an August or September early signing period because I think that takes away guys' ability to maybe make some hay their senior year. You know what I mean? Like you were a pretty good junior, but you can have a breakout senior year and improve your standing a little bit. And I think that, you know, I think that would leave a bunch of guys with a lot of regret and cause more problems than it solved, to be honest with you.
I see. Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. I appreciate it. I think that's the truth. I mean, I feel like that's how I would feel about an earlier football signing period. I understand why it's in December now. I don't know why, other than convenience for the football coaches, I don't know why it would have been in February by the time that the season ends in December. Most high school football seasons are over, at least early December. You kind of know what a guy is. That guy kind of knows what he is, where he ranks. The only thing to wait for would be guys flipping and scholarships opening and guys not making grades.
Yep.
Back to the soccer. I think we all feel, we Curtis and I wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't be listening if you didn't feel strongly about sports in some regard. And I am always
pro-flopping.
Not, I'm anti-flopping.
Oh, okay.
Totally anti-flopping. Did you see the red card in the Iran game,
no.
Curtis? Did you? I've got to go back and there was a highlight on, but we were talking to Lee Kay and I missed it there too. But like to see the Iranian fans today, and the going back to Panama, like Curtis, you watch any of that debacle on
yes.
Sunday? Panama, who is in their first ever World Cup. They're in their first ever World Cup thanks to the Americans' failure to reach the World Cup and kind of to a phantom goal that they were allowed against Mexico. But they're in their first ever World Cup. The country went crazy when they qualified. There's a great video of the Panamanian announcer singing along with the national anthem before their first World Cup game. So they're in the middle of getting absolutely blistered by England, who has a chance. They look like a team that's finally good enough to win a World Cup again for the first time since, I think, 1958.
Not buying it.
You're not buying it?
Nope.
Who's better than them?
Anybody. They're England. They're not England.
They're going to fall apart, right? And they're just going to ruin lives.
I'll take Portugal. I'll take Brazil.
Portugal looks really good for a team that's not as young as they once were. Brazil also looks really good. But in the middle of this beatdown, which at one point, did England score their sixth before Panama scored?
I'm not sure.
At one point, it was certainly 5-0. I sort of lost track at that point. A Panamanian dude rolls in, gets across, gets his foot on it, knocks it in the back of the net. The entire Panamanian fan base in the stadium, down 5-1, goes absolutely bananas. They are hugging. They are crying. They are kissing each other. Bananas. that is how much this tournament means to the countries that get to play it almost universally. We take it a little less seriously than they do.
Wait, I thought it was just countries in the world.
It is countries in the world.
Well, then how's it universally?
Well, I feel like outer space countries would also take it that seriously once they learned what soccer was. But the guy who scored the
would
goal...
Would aliens be better at us, better at soccer than we are?
It depends on how many feet they had. Like, if they're floating aliens, they'd probably be really bad at it because it'd be hard for them to get to the ball unless they can move it with their minds, which I think would be unfair. If they have, like, extra feet, like an octopus, I feel like they'd be better at soccer than us unless it made them really clumsy. Regardless, the Panamanian guy that scored was sort of the opposite of the Iranian player who failed to score today. The Panamanian player who scored the goal was like up, like in the crowd, getting hugged by every Panamanian in the stadium after the game for scoring a goal in a match he lost 6-1. It is one of the many reasons I love the World Cup. It is amazing. We will be back with more Big Blue Insider after this on the Home of the Cats, News Radio 630 WLAP. I get no doubt. Welcome back. Big Blue Insider, Mark Berger, closing out another edition for Dick Gabriels. Game on vacation all week, Curtis?
Yep.
All right. Who you got tomorrow?
Me.
Is it you? All right. Curtis.
Round table.
Round Shamrocks. Table. Shamrocks. Go out and get you some grub.
Hang out with me and some other people.
Heckle Curtis and some other folks from the cheap seats. Be good times. I'll be back here Wednesday night. Then I lose track of what happens in the rest of the world for the rest of that week.
Kyle Tucker. On Thursday and Friday.
I did not get to listen to Kyle when he hosted KSR. Or has that happened yet? Is that this week?
He hosted with Buzz, but he's hosting it again this week.
Okay. So check Kyle out. And then, Curtis, like, do you have any news?
On what?
No, not
at this moment.
Not at this moment? Still no news. All right. Curtis got things brewing. Curtis is always working. Curtis, I'll be devastated, but Curtis is eventually going to get too big for the Sunday show. We'll have to find somebody else. Nobody will love our show the way Curtis has. Be sad. Nobody ever did before. I'm still trying to figure out what prompted him to.
I don't know. It's a good question.
It is a
probably
question.
Some deep psychosis somewhere along the lines.
Feel like that's accurate. Curtis, did you see
my grandmother had red hair? Maybe so I have an affinity for it. You
could be
did that you... I suppress and turn into.
I like it. We are sort of distantly related, so there's that.
By marriage.
So
yes. Make sure not to genetics. Always put that caveat in.
Curtis and I are not genetically related. His Proceed family married into my family or vice versa somehow along the way. Did you see the fight, the Big Three? Is it? They still call it the Big Three, the Ice Cube Basketball League?
Yeah.
Did you see the fight?
Yeah, I saw a quick clip of it. And there was like a mom involved?
Like Nate Robinson, like he went over and took somebody's towel or something. He made a basket. And then
they called timeout.
Yes.
And then he went and stole something.
Then he went
the
and stole somebody's
bench.
Towel. And then all heck breaks loose. And then Kenyon Martin's mom comes down and gets into the middle of it. And Kenyon Martin sitting there yelling at his moms to get back up in the seats.
That's a tough situation to be
right.
in, though. I mean, you don't want your mom involved in that. But you can't yell at your mom, but you have to. It's like a no-win situation. So I do not envy Kenyon Martin.
No.
Fun fact, Kenyon Martin's son plays with Scottie Pippen's son on an AAU team.
Is Kenyon Martin's son terrifying?
No.
Because Kenyon Martin was terrifying.
He is not. I mean, but he is 17 years old, I think. So, I mean, he could be terrifying.
I didn't see Kenyon play till he was 19.
Yes.
So,
I mean,
at 19, Kenyon was terrifying. And he got more terrifying as he got older somehow. To the point where I can't believe his mom would ever come down and cross him in any way. Not that
I don't think his mom was crossing him. His mom was trying to fight Nate. Who do you have in a fight? Nate Robinson or Kenyon Martin's mom?
Kenyon Martin's mom, because she raised Kenyon Martin and kept him in line. You think Kenyon Martin's terrifying? The woman who kept that man in line is even more terrifying. Give me her versus Nate Robinson. And what does Nate Robinson think he's doing trying to take on Kenyon Martin anyway?
He wasn't taking on... No, that wasn't Kenyon Martin.
The original thing was with somebody else. I can't remember who the original thing was with. He's a guy who used to be pretty athletic, but is really big now, like a lot of the Big Three guys are. Kenyon Martin still looks like he could play in a real league.
Oh yeah, I saw him in Atlanta when he was watching his son.
Dude,
they play for the Oakland Soldiers out there. Kenyon Martin Jr. is a three-star guy who plays in Western Hills, California. 6'6", 185, so he's not as big as his dad.
Kenyon Martin was as good a college basketball center as dang near anybody who's ever done it.
I don't know if you heard this.
What's that?
But according to some Cincinnati fans, he wouldn't have got injured. They would have won a national championship.
I've heard that said, and I'm not a Cincinnati fan, but if he hadn't gotten injured, I like their chances there. That was a really good basketball team, and that was really unfortunate, especially in a dumb throwaway game early in a nonsense tournament that they were going to win with or without him. Although I think they ended up finishing runners-up that year. I was surprised they got that far. I expected them to crater right after. Bob Huggins, sad, getting the job done.
Still doing it pretty well.
He is still doing it pretty well.
Up in his home, his West Virginia home.
I was not a huge fan of Huggins when he was at UC, and I like him more now because, one, he's not at UC, and two, he seems to be in on the Bob Huggins joke at this point, where he just doesn't take himself remotely seriously.
Well, almost dying will give you some
gives you a little more perspective
and levity about yourself, I think.
It didn't make him any healthier, though. Did you notice that?
I mean, that's always tough to judge. You don't know someone. He could be okay. I mean, still, I mean, it might benefit him to take 1X out of the windbreakers that he buys, but
yeah, his windbreakers still don't fit him very well. I'm just saying. But he is getting the job done at West Virginia, as we have seen once, and then we thumped him a couple other times.
I love when he talks really low. He does that after he loses a game, he's just like,
see, that would be scary too.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
But it's a weird situation because you're like, he's talking real low, and so you're like leaning in. And then you realize you're like, oh, no, I'm getting closer to him.
Yeah, I don't
want
to get that close to him.
And then you don't know what to do. So you're in this weird, am I going to hear what he says? Or am I not going to understand what he says and then hopefully not repeat a question and get in even bigger trouble?
Right. You don't want to be that guy. That guy would be a problem. Thanks for spending some of your evening with us. Our thanks to Lee K. Howard for hanging out with us for a while. For Curtis Birch, this is Mark Berger. And this has been Big Blue Insider on the Home of the Cats. News Radio 630 WLAP.
Why are you wearing a tux?
It's after 6. What am I, a farmer?